Hello everyone, this is Ned O'Meara from domainer.com.au, welcoming you all to our first of many podcast interviews. To kick it off today, we have the new head honcho of NetSuite, Jonathan Gleeson. Good morning, Jonathan, and welcome.
Morning, everyone. Morning, Ned.
Now, Jonathan, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Obviously, you've come over from Melbourne IT, but how about you let us know in your own words what you've done and where you're going to?
Okay, so I guess we'll start it. I've got a bachelor's degree in information technology and a master's in business administration, and I was with Net Registry for about 8 years in the role of head of technology. So that was the chief technology officer's right-hand man. When Melbourne IT bought them, I stayed in that position, moved over to Melbourne IT's chief technology officer's right-hand man. In that time, I've basically led every part of the technology department at Net Registry. So the development teams, assist admin teams, we've designed and architected what Net Registry had, supported it, built it, done everything for it. Into the future, for me, not sure right now, just taking this role at NetSuite, so it's a bit exciting here.
See what happens. Beautiful. No, excellent. So, given your tech background, do we sort of call you a geek or not? Or are you sort of a bit of everything?
I'm a tech at heart, but I've been in senior management for quite a while now, so it's more management of technology now than actually getting in and doing the tech work.
Yeah, exactly. At least you've got a good understanding of it, so that's makes a big difference to many others that don't have an understanding of both sides of the business equation. So that's great. So, Jonathan, how did you end up at NetSuite, given that you were at Net Registry for so long?
So, obviously, Net Registry is going through a lot of change. Melbourne IT taking them over. NetSuite had an opportunity that I discussed with them probably a few months ago now, and that came to fruition, so it looked like a good role to step into. The board at NetSuite wanted someone that was technically minded in the big chair leading them, because they're very automated, there's a lot of technology floating around in NetSuite, so it seemed like a good place to be.
Excellent. And so what's your actual title and what are your responsibilities?
So the title's General Manager. I'm responsible for every business function at NetSuite, technology, customer service, sales, the whole lot.
And have you got some help?
I have. We've got a small team. There's only five of us at the moment, but we're growing.
Wow, that's great. Now, given NetSuite's owned by NetAlliance, which is obviously a joint venture between Melbourne IT and Mark and David Lai, who do you report to? And what's, I guess, the next question following on that would be, what's your level of autonomy?
I report to the board, which consists of basically the people you've just mentioned. Got the same level of autonomy that any general manager or CEO would have in a business. I've got a scope of responsibilities and I've got metrics that I need to meet within that scope.
So who from Melbourne IT is on the board? I'm not really aware of that, so I thought I'd ask the question.
Yep, so Melbourne IT have their CFO, which is Peter Finlay, he's on the board, and their Chief Strategy Officer, Bruce Tonkin, is on the board.
Okay.
And then from the Lai guys, Mark sits on the board as well.
Okay, great. So David's not involved in the board level?
David acts more like a consultant to the board. Obviously, he was a founder of NetSuite.
Sure.
And rather done that together. So, you know, if they want advice, they'll go and ask David. They'll listen to him.
He knows good. He's a very smart guy, that's for sure. I've had the pleasure of sitting on a panel with Bruce Tonkin before, so I know him well. And obviously, I know and respect Brett Fenton from Net Registry. He's a great guy.
Yep, I worked closely with both of them in my role, so, yep.
Excellent. Now, let's get a couple of the perceived negatives out of the way first so that you can tell me all about the exciting things that you've got planned for the future. Firstly, probably the biggest complaint heard around the traps has been the sort of lack of communication in recent times, you know, not answering tickets and agreeing to do some things in forums but not doing them, etc. You know, in a prior conversation we had, you and I, before this interview, you said you were aware of some of these issues. I guess what my listeners and readers want to know is, what do you propose to do to fix these problems, and if you are going to fix them, how are you going to do it?
Well, like I said to you in that previous conversation, the first thing I did when I came on board was sort of take a pulse and get a feeling for where our customers were. And you know, I really noticed there's quite a negative sentiment from our customers regarding the lack of communication out of NetFleet. It's only been a week or two now, but I've already implemented a new system for tracking communication, which is monitoring our ticketing system, it's monitoring our social media interaction, the forums that we participate in, and it's presenting us with a single view of our customers and customer communication. So I'm hoping that we start to see some immediate results in response time, not just for the urgent inquiries, but all inquiries. I've also planned to start implementing some service metrics so that we can focus on a bit of measurable target to improve on. Like I said, it's only 2 weeks in, so I'm hoping to see some improvement in the next maybe month or so.
Well, that's excellent. That's a great start anyway. I think the most important thing in any business is that you've got to listen to the people that pay your bills, I guess, and that keep you going.
That's right.
One of the issues I did notice, so I was just when I was doing a little bit of research last night, just going on Dean Throne and having a look at some of the things that were mentioned. It was just one thing that was planned to do, and I think Mark had agreed to do it, was regarding bids on the drop platform, et cetera, where somebody, if they'd made a typo or whatever, and they couldn't get hold of someone to do something, they wanted the ability to be able to change it themselves automatically or manually, rather. And I know that from reading it, that Mark had agreed to do that at some stage, but nothing seemed to have happened, and that's been sort of a year. Are you aware of that, or is that something that you can have a look at, perhaps?
Oh, I can have a look at that. We've started drafting out a development roadmap for our system already, and one of the things in there was improving the functionality of the bidding system so that you could go in and you could increase your bid, you could withdraw your bid up to a certain point, that sort of stuff. So that is coming.
Great.
A matter of putting it in. You know, we wouldn't let everyone withdraw their bid at the last minute, but we might have like a lockout period or something that we could implement.
I totally understand that. I just think that is fantastic. If you could do that, and speaking as someone who's, you know, been a big bidder from time to time, I mean, occasionally you do put a bid in and you think, oh, I'll put an extra digit in, I want to change that. And I know you can do it on, you know, like for instance on Drop, you can do that. You can actually change your bid down. So I think that would be a great thing to do. And I know that certainly you'd win a few friends that have been sort of stung in the past that way. So no, that's great. Great to hear that you're doing it.
Like we've sort of mapped out what features we have now and what needs to improve around those features, and it's just a matter of timelining it together to see what our development cycle looks like.
Oh, terrific. Look forward to that. Last niggly question. A lot of newbies and perhaps some oldies as well don't understand the $1 bids that appear on your drop platform now and then. So can you explain what's the reasoning and rationale behind those?
So the $1 bids, I'm going to assume, are the Publishing Australia bids. I've done a bit of research in this. I've asked a lot of questions from Mark and David. Basically, Publishing Australia is a separate entity, and several years ago, from what I understand, used to do a lot of bidding on both NetFleet and Drop, just like a normal client would. But there was complaints made regarding the relationship between Publishing Australia and NetFleet. So an agreement was formed between Publishing Australia and OUTA that Publishing Australia could still bid on those platforms, but it wasn't allowed to bid competitively. So essentially they place $1 bids to map up whatever is left over that no one actually wants. So they're only really getting the scraps.
So who actually places those bids when you say it's Publishing Australia? Is that David placing them, or is it Mark, or is it somebody on behalf of them doing it? I mean, how does it actually happen? Because if it's only on domains that are left over, I mean, how do they know that they haven't had bids on them?
It's not necessarily on the domains that are left over. They just don't bid more than a dollar. So if someone's bid $2, like our bidding platform and all the bidding platforms that I'm aware of always goes to the highest bidder, so you know, that they'll never increase their bid past the dollar.
Oh, I see.
It's an unrelated entity. I've got actually no idea who actually places the bids. But yeah, they've got an agreement with OUTA that they won't competitively bid. So they can still obtain domains through the aftermarket auctions, but they're not allowed to, you know, place thousands of dollar bids to blow everyone out of the water. They're only allowed to place the minimum bid of the dollar.
Yeah, well, that's good that you're explaining that, because I think, you know, there's a few people out there thinking to themselves, well, what sort of access do, you know, the people behind the scenes have? Do they have an unfair advantage over their customers? Are they looking at the platform from, you know, from outside in sort of thing? And so that was obviously when those dollar bids sort of happened. you know, what domainers are. Well, I'm sure you'll find out what domainers are like. We come up with all these conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So
they've got the same access from Publishing Australia that all the other domainers have. They just go in and place a dollar.
That's different to everyone else in that they're allowed to place a dollar, whereas no one else is allowed to place a dollar bid.
Yeah, they're the only bid there. They can only place a dollar bid. So.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, thank you for explaining that. I appreciate that. So on to the positive. Obviously, you're excited about the future of Netflix. How about telling everyone what's in store for us?
So just recently, we're starting to map out what the future looks like. So we're working on a return to client auctions via our platform. We'd like to see that come back. I've just started planning a new shopping cart and customer interface for us, which is going to include some domain portfolio management features that we really lack right now. We're going to try and add some additional services, things that are simple add-ons to what we already sell, like DNS management as part of the portfolio management. I've already soft launched the new registration functionality. Netflix never actually done new registrations. It was only in the aftermarket. We thought, hey, let's turn it on. Maybe some of our customers that have one or two domains with us already might buy a new one as well.
And what sort of can I just quickly ask on that? What sort of pricing structure are you doing on that?
We're using the same pricing structure that we use for the registration. So we've got a few different brackets of pricing depending on how many domains you've got. So it sort of works the same way. What else have we got? Oh, we're starting to investigate the opportunities to move our aftermarket functionality into other TLDs. So we'd like to move into like .nz and things like that to start snapping up in other markets. And we've also just invested in a heap of new technology to try and increase the performance of our snapping system so we can get more domains for you guys.
Ah, okay, good. Well, a bit of competition that's sort of come to the fore in recent times, I guess. An ex-employee of yours, Anthony Petra, is now at Domain Shield, and he seems to be doing reasonably well there.
Competition's good, though.
Exactly. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And then on the other side, you've got Drop, who used to be the leaders. Domain 8, before they became Drop, they used to be the leaders, and then Netflix took over. So it's a great competitive process. And now Drop, unfortunately, aren't very competitive at all. So you guys obviously are sort of number one, and Domain Shield are trying to snap at your heels. But if you are going to be investing in more technology, it sounds like you mean business. So
yes, we're also doing the boring stuff like getting all of our equipment compliant to ADA's ISS standard and all that sort of stuff. So they're not exciting. You don't want to hear about that stuff.
No. Well, I know there's putting a lot of registrars under stress. I do know that. You mentioned the aftermarket, that you're going to get back into that. That's been something that a lot of domainers have been keen about and wondering what's happening with that. Probably one of the biggest beefs, if I can use the word beef, probably one of the biggest beefs people have had is that there's been no ability to communicate between buyer and seller on the platform, a bit like, if you have on Flipper, and on Domain Name Sales, Frank Schilling's platform, you can at least communicate between buyer and seller without, and that sort of seems to help make a sale rather than lose a sale by not communicating anything. Have you got any plans for that?
I don't, but I've just written that down, and I'm going to go put it on our list of items to investigate, Ned. That's a great one. Thank you.
Yeah, no, look, it's something that we have all talked about in the past, and it's been raised on DN Trade in the past, and Mark... I know initially resisted it at first and then was sort of warming to it, but, as a domainer myself, I just think, at the moment I don't have many domains for sale on Netflix simply because I'm just sick of the $100 minimum bids that you can get through and then everyone goes up by $1 or $20 or whatever it is and you can't communicate with your potential buyer. So I know that you would get a lot more business if there was that ability to communicate. And it's not a matter of losing out on business. I just, and I think that's perhaps what Netflix was worried about, that people would do business privately. But you don't have to give away people's emails, addresses or something. But if you can communicate and negotiate on your platform, I think you will see a huge increase in sales.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, if you can look at that, that would be wonderful. So final question for you. Where does Netfleet stand with regards to the current discussions over the possibility of direct registrations? If they do proceed to the next stage in the approval process, do you think there should be some form of rights protection for existing registrants, or are you sort of being Switzerland at the moment and a bit neutral on it all? Where do you stand?
Like it was in our recent newsletter, Netfleet at this time's going to remain neutral. We're interested in seeing input from our customers. That's why we're, you know, trying to show both sides of the argument. Personally, I'd hope that there'd be some sort of right protection in place for existing domain owners if it is opened up, and then there is opportunities there for us and our customers if it is opened up. But at this point, we really want to see what our customers want first before we weigh in on the argument.
Oh, okay, well, that's fair enough. Anything else you wanted to add while you've got the opportunity?
Not really, Ned. I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity.
It's been absolutely my pleasure. I'm going to obviously post this podcast on domainer.com.au, and if I may suggest, there may be a few questions that people might want to ask out of the domainers. They may come on and ask polite and respectful questions. I hope that you might be able to interact with those and give you a good forum to answer some of those questions.
Not a problem at all. I'll keep my eye on it.
Beautiful. Thanks for your time, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ned.